comment on a Supreme Court decision that came down on earlier this week on this, that has to do with police powers, where Judge Sonia Sotomayor quoted everyone from Ta-Nehisi Coates of Baltimore to Michelle Alexander.
Yeah, well, Freddie Gray was really charged with running from the police. I mean, he committed no crime. He was charged with no crime. And another Supreme Court case gave the police reasonable suspicion to go after Freddie Gray. This case was even more deplorable, Amy, because what's done now is that police can literally stop you, detain you, investigate whether you have any outstanding warrants without any belief that you do have a warrant. So police can now stop if they find a warrant, and they found one for the Utah man for failing to pay a traffic fine, then they can arrest you and do a full-blown search. And so Justice Sotomayor really took on Justice Thomas's majority opinion.
And we're going to leave it there right now, but we're going to continue the conversation post-show and post it online at democracynow.org. Doug Colbert, professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, and Joshua Harris, Baltimore's Green Party candidate for mayor. Thanks so much both for joining us. I'll be speaking Saturday at the WAM NYC Gender Justice and Media Conference at Barnard College at 4 p.m. Check democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Up next is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Art of Living, presenting Get Happy Portland, a two-day immersive experience of breathing techniques and meditation by global humanitarian Sri Ravi Shankar. Get Happy Portland takes place July 5th and 6th at the Oregon Convention Center. Tickets and information are available at gethappyportland.org. And also, Oregon Country Fair, July 8th, 9th, and 10th, featuring music and crafts in Veneta, Oregon. Admission and parking tickets will be available only at Tickets West, as absolutely no tickets will be sold at the fair site. Directions to this family event and information on the shuttle at Valley River Center is available online at OregonCountryFair.org.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning. Good morning. It is about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are Positively Revolting as ever. We hope you are too. And this morning, we are just very, very happy to once again be joined with Judith Arcana, local poet, historian, author, teacher, writer. You do a lot of stuff. And You are a reproductive justice activist as well. And in that, in all of those roles, we see them coming together in this event next week, which we'll be talking about. But that is sort of the impetus for bringing our focus back to reproductive rights, to the history of contraception, the control of women's sexuality through legislation, and the like. And so the event is next week. It's the 100th anniversary of the arrest of Margaret Sanger in Portland for obscenity charges for teaching about contraception. And to mark that, there'll be things that we'll talk about in a moment. But I thought before we really get started, Judith told us that she has a poem she could share this morning on birth control. And I thought maybe we could frame the show thusly.
Thanks. Good to be here with you two again and everybody out there in Radio Land. So yes, this poem is called Birth Control, and it's in my book, What If Your Mother? Birth Control. Long ago, and more recently than we think, far away and much closer than we imagine, women have used cervical plugs of beeswax. They did not read this in a contraception handbook. Some insist, despite the evidence, that drinking cold water right before sex will make sperm sluggish. Others think chicken broth with pepper seeds will work if it burns your lips. Women douche with rosemary, coriander, crushed willow leaves, in vinegar, powdered myrrh mixed with cloves and dried parsley tea. These are fragrant, near biblical, and useless. Salt, honey, and mint have never worked, but often they are all there is, pasted up inside. Disgust. Some go all the way to death. Lead powder. Ergot. This has been for sex, sometimes for pleasure. There's never been something you could be sure of. Nothing you could be sure wouldn't hurt. There always was a chance. The gamble, sometimes good. The odds, sometimes bad. Right now, they're making something new. They'll say it's safe. They'll say it's sure. They'll say anything. We know that. But then we find, oh, look, we find just 87%. They'll say, you didn't use it right. You forgot. You waited too long. You did it too soon. They'll say 98%, as if it were 100. But 2% of us will know. 2% will be the data, information rarely offered in the little paper inserts, print so small that even if you can read, you can't read it.
Thank you, Judith.
Salt, ow.
Yeah, and other creepy, scary, painful stuff. And even now, as you know, many birth control methods are not exactly a gift from the heavens.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that people forget, especially the anti-abortion movement folks, or maybe they don't forget, they don't want to mention, is that there is nothing, even now, here in the 21st century, that is both 100% effective and here's the important part, 100% healthy and safe for us to use. So there has to be abortion backup, and there have to continue to be moves toward finding birth control methods that won't hurt us at the same time that they help us make these serious decisions in useful ways.
And yet at this time where it seems only logical to go ahead and progress down these paths. In fact, what we're seeing is legislation and turmoil around even access to contraceptives. Again, you know, because you can't really, we do hope, stick the genie all the way back in the bottle, right?
That I want to see a sit-in in the, Senate about this.
You know, they're not talking about outlawing contraceptives, but women's access to them through insurance, through all of these other measures and youth access, parental consent laws, teen clinics, actually getting useful information to the populace that needs it, right?
Yes.
That has been restricted, and yes, not only legislatively, but attitudinally.
Well put, yes. Yes, the education, in quotation marks, creates the attitude that I think you're talking about here, Ani. And it's freaky, really. I mean, one of the things that's been so interesting, one of the many things that's been so interesting to me in preparing for this Wednesday's event, talking about stuff that happened literally 100 years ago on the 29th of June in 1916 in downtown Portland. One of the interesting things has been thinking about how, well, 100 years have passed, and then remembering, realizing, thinking about what you just said, Ani, that now is not what you would might what you would or might assume would have happened, that everything would be progressively getting better and better over time. Yes, indeed, there have been great things that have happened in these 100 years. But here we are again with fear and ignorance and an actual political movement against the access to safe and reasonably priced and available contraceptive methods for women and for men, for that matter.
You know, I just keep thinking that there's, when things changed a lot in the 60s and the 70s, right?
Uh-huh.
But there's still this core underneath of racism, of sexism, that still has to be flushed out somehow. And I think it's a darn shame that people have to suffer through that, and I don't want it. But it seems like that's kind of what's going on now to me. This backlash is, it's like the backlash of the racism that's happening now. It was all in there. It's all in the American psyche or white people, Europeans throughout the world, and it has to be flushed out somehow. And so it's coming out. People thought these things and they didn't say them. Now they feel very free to say them. And now, but you can't in some ways exterminate or extinguish them or deal with them or purge them until they come out. And I don't like that, but.
Yeah, we don't like that. It's quite true. And it's very important to raise that at every turn where there's something that what's in front, let's say, for instance, the use of condoms, diaphragms, under the skin patches, whatever. This seems like it's not involved with what you just said, Lynn, but in fact, inside, just what you said, really, I agree completely, that these other festering, ugly concerns, issues, problems, this viciousness that exists within the structure and history of the society is part of access to birth control, is part of healthy childbirth, is part of after-school programs for kids whose mothers are working full-time, and so on and so on and so on. Yes, all of those things are embedded in every issue that we deal with, every concern that we have as a society. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, when birth control pills came out, oh, this is it. We're done now. We have contraception. It's all just take this little pill. Oh, side effects? Now it'd be on TV. Side effects may include.
Yes.
And then the commercial has to be 30 seconds longer.
Yeah, right.
To
right.
Them all
exactly.
In. excuse me. I do want to invite listeners to give us a ring at 503-231-8187 if you'd like to join in this conversation this morning. That's 503-231-8187. You can also, throughout the week, like us on Facebook, follow along there, participate in comments and lively discussions. Also on Twitter, you can find us on Twitter at Positive Revolt. On Facebook, we are Positively Revolting. And let's go ahead and look at the beginning of this 100-year cycle and the event that sort of inspired the show today. So next Wednesday, the 29th, is the anniversary of Margaret Sanger's arrest.
Yes.
Tell us about that. What she was in town educating people on birth control.
Yes. There's a little backstory. First of all, Sanger was on a national tour. And she had actually come to Portland a little before the 29th, and there were flurries. I'm not going to talk too much about the other dates, but so it was essentially her return to Portland. And this was, everywhere she went, there was furor and, you know, aggravation and consternation and people who were upset about the very subject, people who were upset about people being outspoken about, women talking about sexuality and maternity in these terms, talking about this pamphlet she had created called Family Limitation, the illustrations, the very concept. Anyway, so she comes back and she's working here in Portland with her colleague and pal, Dr. Marie Equi, who was herself a major figure. First of all, one of the first women physicians, of course. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the very beginning of the 20th century here. And a woman who openly, as many did in the city in those days, performed abortions. And a woman who was strongly supportive of working class and poor folks and who did a lot of medical care with and for them. So here's a nurse, Margaret Sanger, who's come across the country and is doing a tour to educate and, let's just leave it at educate, folks about birth control, and a doctor, Marie Equi, who's here in the Pacific Northwest, who has been doing this kind of work anyway, and they're working together along with some women in the community. There was a, I think 70 is the number, 70-member birth control league operating here in Portland and environs. And so the idea was she was going to make a speech. Now, in her absence between the two visits, the all-men city council, five guys, had banned this pamphlet, made it illegal to distribute it, to have it. So when she returned and began talking about it, the city council had ordered the cops to arrest her. And there were many, many people who were already in the streets on their way to what was, it doesn't exist anymore, to the Baker Theater downtown. And those people were incensed, naturally, and there ensued a scene, a big scene, which some newspapers actually referred to as a near riot. And I think probably, I mean, I wasn't there, obviously. This was 100 years ago.
I love that phrase, a near riot.
Yes, exactly.
Things must have been boisterous.
Yes,
is what I'm thinking.
They were indeed boisterous.
Well, it was close, but not quite.
Right, yes. Who's in charge of deciding when it, yes, now it's a riot. Before, it was just a near riot. Okay, so these people were incensed. They were literally that famous old phrase, righteously indignant, and they followed where Sanger, Equi, and two members of the local birth control league were being taken to the county courthouse. Followed in this huge pack of people shouting, "Arrest us too! Arrest us too! We are guilty of reading that pamphlet. We are guilty of having that pamphlet." Needless to say, they were not all arrested. Well, I shouldn't say that. These days, a lot of people get arrested in big clumps like that. But on this occasion, that didn't happen. They were arrested, they were tried, they were jailed briefly. They were, of course, out on bail soon enough. However, that's what happened on June 29th, 1916. And this year, 2016, on June 29th, a small group of historians and reproductive justice advocates are putting on a commemorative event downtown at some of the locations that seem to us relevant to make note, shall we say, in public and in some of our cases in costume, 1916
okay.
Costumes.
Excellent. That's fairly Edwardian.
Yes. They were donated to us for the occasion by the Oregon Historical Society.
Very nice.
Yes. And we are beginning our event on the plaza outside of the Oregon Historical Society, who have been wonderful. The new issue of their quarterly, which is out momentarily, maybe 2 minutes ago, maybe 2 minutes from now, will include a long article about the 1916 event and also a comic book, a 4-page comic book created by Michael Hellquist and Chris Soden, which we will have with us when we're out in the streets going from place to place along the route.
Excellent.
That is fantastic. 503-231-8187, the number to call. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are here with Judith Arcana this morning, and we are talking about contraception. We are talking about reproductive justice. We are talking about so many things and the history thereof and the cycles in our history. We were talking, Lynn had mentioned that sort of pendulum swing, really, that things had seemed to progress at a fairly steady pace for at least many communities, not all communities, through the 60s. And then there was this, wow, the Cultural Revolution. You know, I'm just a scooch younger, so I grew up knowing that, oh, it's already been done. Yay. Thanks, folks that are a decade older than me. Awesome. I just get to enjoy, you know, contraception and you know, this new way of being in the world where we're not necessarily tied to these, you know, what I thought were, you know, outdated, you know, what concerns, right? I'm free now. And I was enjoying that. And I started, you know, working for a clinic that provided contraception and abortion care in a feminist setting when I was in my 20s. And I started seeing, even as early as the late 80s, there was something that was happening with attitudes amongst young women. And, you know, whereas I was coming into, you know, my early teens and that burgeoning, wow, you know, my ideas about sex in the late 70s, early 80s. And there was a serious lack of shame involved, I think, is what I'm trying to get at here. You know,
that was the problem.
You know, the you know, the sexual revolution had happened. Women are allowed to, you know, say that we are sexual beings. And then we had 8 years of Reagan, right? And we had this and that. And suddenly I'm at this healthcare clinic. And instead of having, you know, women 17, 18 years of age, you know, 16 to 20, say anything about their access to contraceptions, anything about what they, you know, knew from health class, they were suddenly telling me that they were doing things that I remember reading about had been done in the 50s, you know, douching with Coke, you know, and things like, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Don't you know there are things now that, you know, and it started occurring to me that already there is this sort of new Puritanism that was coming back into the psyche.
And an enforced ignorance. An enforced ignorance. It's easy to slide into what you're calling appropriately Puritanism when you don't know anything else. When even in school, where you're supposed to be getting quote unquote sex ed,
right,
you're not getting the information that you need. And certainly the 80s did see, I mean, that change you just described, yeah. That's an accurate history there. Yeah. Also, I think, well, two kinds of things. I mean, it's interesting. You raised this part. Lynn raised the other part. I think it's really important for us to remember that all of this has embedded within it this change, this culture, this sociocultural change to a new rise of shame, fear, and ignorance among women and girls, beginning roughly in the 80s and quite deliberately fomented by political action, and also the racism and classism that Lynn identified several minutes back. This is going on at the same time and moving, of course, through history. So that, for instance, the pill, what do we have? How did they get that? Well, they experimented on women in Puerto Rico.
And Thailand, I believe.
Also Thailand and many women in India and Pakistan, then still not completely separate, but moving along, sterilizing women in India, sterilizing men as well, I believe. And all of these folks were, in essence, fodder for the medical industry, working toward what in many ways was indeed a boon, but had those problems that you both have mentioned. So all of this is happening at the same time. You could say that part of the reason that what you just said, Ani, happened, you could say, one could say, is that the well was poisoned already, because all this terribleness, all this viciousness, all this suppression and oppression of and use of peoples, use of whole populations of peoples, the women and girls, particularly in those populations, was part of what was supposedly seeding the liberation of women and girls through the creation of contraception. So when the well is poisoned, the water doesn't taste so good anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's actually, I realize, a very apt thing for us in Portland right now.
Yeah.
Portland and nearby communities. I don't want to change the subject, but I guess what I'm saying is this stuff goes on in every aspect of our lives, and the hidden parts need to be
exposed, brought to light.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the connections, I mean, certainly we cannot extract racism and classism and, you know, and the oppression of women and communities, period. You know, we cannot extract them. They are not separate issues, but are really quite connected underground deeply.
And one of the cool things about Margaret Sanger's early work, and I'm specifying that because she did some other stuff in the coming decades that was not so thrilling, but one of the really cool things about her early work, and this was part of her camaraderie, I believe, with Dr. Equi, Marie Equi, was that they focused on working class women. Because, and this was one of the slogans on one of the signs in 1916, and is, of course, on our signs for Wednesday, the 29th, next week, and that is that poor women and working class women are being deprived of what rich women have always had access to. And certainly that is still true now in the United States, whether you're talking about contraceptive devices or pharmaceuticals, or you're talking about access to abortion. Women with money can get what they need. Women with money usually also have gotten the information they've needed to let them know that they can get what they need, what it is, and where to get it. But women who don't have the money are in a completely different situation. They might well be, and in some ways are, in a completely different society. And so that was built into the text of the pamphlet. You can, as I say, you folks can find it online, and it came out in many iterations over the decades. It's interesting, possibly only for historians and politicos, to look at the differences as Sanger changed over time. But in the period that we're talking about, when she was here in 1916 working with Equi, the focus was on working people, people who did not have the means to get whatever they wanted, whatever they needed.
And a simple little title, Family Limitation.
Yes, yes. Well, of course, if you are a person who believes, as apparently the guys on the city council were, that families should not be limited, that's a problem right there, well, even though it's such a sweet way of saying it.
And of course, it boiled down to power.
Oh, absolutely.
And not wanting to relinquish it. I mean, I understand that in many ways, but too bad.
Too bad. That's right. Yes.
It is time for the leveling. Come on.
Right. Yes.
And actually, let's look at and explore power for a minute, because I think that one of the reasons, I mean, if we really want to get to it, what is the threat around women's access to contraception, right? What makes it obscene for anyone to advocate that women actually control their fertility and have some sort of agency in their lives?
Yeah, they were accused, by the way, folks out there listening to us, of obscenity and lewdness in talking about this stuff and in the text. Well, that's probably exactly what you're referring to, Ani. What makes people what makes the guys on the city council in 1916 and unfortunately their successors in our time of various genders.
Well, there's only one woman. There's still almost five guys on the city council.
But there might be another.
I know.
There might be another. Chloe's on the run. So we'll see what happens in the fall. Now I'm thinking about the election. I lost my train of thought.
Stop that.
But it's what would cause the power structure to tremble with the idea that contraception people might learn about it, people might use it, women might have agency and might actually be able to act outside of the restraint of enforced motherhood.
Yeah. Well, I think, naturally, as you know from my work, I've thought a lot about this stuff.
That's why we asked you to be on.
And I think that there are many levels. One thing that happens, I'm pretty sure, this is what I believe, is that some of it is so internalized. Misogyny, sexism, the assumption of female inferiority is so internalized that the people who behave in the ways that we're talking about don't even realize that that's where they're coming from, and they think that showing illustrations of a woman's body, those illustrations by definition are obscene because that should not be in the public eye. So they don't say to themselves, well, women aren't as good as men, or girls aren't as good as boys, or they don't have the brains or the strength. They don't say those things. They don't even know they're thinking things like that. They think they're thinking, oh, this is not appropriate. Children shouldn't see this. Ladies should not see this. Working women who aspire to be ladies should not see this. So that's one kind of thing, that it's sort of even hidden from themselves. And then for those who are definitely conscious of what they're doing, there is the specific thing of not wanting to give, well, it's what Lynn was talking about a moment ago, not wanting to give up the power that you're defining, Ani, not wanting to let more people, in this case, gendered differently people, have the right to make decisions that heretofore only men people have had the right to make. Look, we're in charge here. Why should we let you be in charge?
Right, and sometimes that's veiled in a protective, we just want to protect them.
Absolutely.
The little thing, cute little things. We just want to,
don't worry your pretty little head about that. We'll take care of it.
Yes. That's at the base of a lot of rather right-wing thinking about women.
And also, the idea of, for instance, in the middle of the 20th century, experimenting on Puerto Rican women to develop the pill, that's such a clear example of, maybe they were conscious, maybe they were unconscious, but in point of fact, what they were doing was saying, these people are expendable. Mm-hmm. These people are not necessary. These people don't matter to us, these women of Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. These are the people we can experiment on. And then when we get it right, then we can use it on middle-class white women and upper-class white women in the United States.
And we see that actually throughout medical history. In so many, so many trials for different therapies, over the last 150, 200, that's
the history of the nation.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, is a nation whose economy is rooted in slavery.
Yeah.
That's how the nation got to be a nation, economically speaking, was by enslaving people from Africa.
And so that colonialist mindset coming through in medical experimentation and in, in developing new, quote, helpful technologies, to see that initially all of these advances come at the cost of, communities of color, of poor communities.
Yeah.
And that, I believe, you mentioned earlier, Judith, poisoning the well, right?
Yes.
So when we live in a capitalist system that is based on the oppression of some for the advancement of others. Mm. It's, that is interwoven throughout all of the aspects of the society. And so I want to look at some of the criticisms of Sanger, actually. I think we can segue to that because I think that it's important to discuss them. and see them, you know, for what they are. And I'll also talk about how things have been used, you know, in ways by folks who might not be, well, let's just go ahead and say it, for folks that are anti-choice in general, to sort of look at Margaret Sanger's work and really vilify the lot of it.
Yeah. False narratives, including
misattributing some pretty horrific quotes. So anyway, I want to sort of start unpacking that, because I think that the criticisms are there, and we should really see how it is that sometimes, even with great intentions, we can also be duped into participating in evils.
Yes, and sometimes, yes. Let's just, I'll stick with yes.
That's nice and positive.
Yes, that's right, yeah. We can be duped into, or we can forget ourselves. Mm. We can get so excited about, oh, look, we can do this, that we can lose the sense of connection to others around us. And it's very, very easy to do that if the sense of connection is weak, or is in some cases non-existent, to folks who are notably different, and particularly folks who have much less power than the person we're hypothesizing here who's having these ideas. So yeah, Sanger, there are a couple of things that Sanger did in her career, her long and mostly useful career, that are basically, in my view, horrific. She signed on with the eugenics movement, and
let's explain eugenics for folks who may not know what that is.
I actually brought a few words here so that I would be able to give a clear definition.
Well, and you have mentioned earlier in the show that you're distinguishing between her early work,
yes,
and then what she was to do later in her career. And I think that that's where she was signing on to.
Yeah. You don't hear a whole lot about eugenics now by that name. Let's see. Eugenics was considered science. Now I think it would be considered junk science. It was the idea, or the acting on the idea, that only certain people should be allowed to and encouraged to reproduce, because those people were the ones that we, that is to say the people in charge of making such decisions and implementing them, wanted to have in the world. And you'll not be surprised to hear that the people who were wanted were white, the people who were wanted were of European descent, the people who were wanted were of upper middle class levels, as if these things were biological. And they also... what were their language included? I found this stuff when I did a term at the Rockefeller Archives some years back. Morons, they said, must not remain fertile. Homosexuals and mental defectives must not have children, nor may citizens marked with incurable physical defects reproduce. Epileptics, deaf mutes, and the congenitally blind could legally marry each other if they were ill-advised enough to do so, but must be sterilized first. Now, that's the kind of thinking that the eugenics movement was about. And that is not an exaggeration. That is from their own papers, from archives that I was studying about 15 years ago. And interestingly enough, horrifyingly, the work that was done by the eugenics movement in the United States strongly influenced the Nazis.
Absolutely.
Who considered the eugenics movement of the USA to be primo and employed it in their own extermination programs of people they had already determined to be inferior. So doing any work with those people is obviously unacceptable. Sanger didn't find it unacceptable, partly, I think, for the probable reason that they were supporting her work. Because, of course, contraception was of use to their programs, where they weren't outright just killing the people they found inferior. So the eugenics connection is a horrific example. However, it's important to note that at the very same time that she was getting caught up in this and hanging around with those folks, she was also doing things like co-founding a clinic in Harlem, in New York, that had an entirely, that their medical staff was completely African-American, which was unheard of in those days, and also helping to found a clinic in New York. She was stationed in, or she lived in the Northeast, where the medical staff was all female, and doing other really good stuff. So it's a tangle, like anyone else's life, although in her case, writ large, it's a tangled business. She did all this good stuff, and she did some bad stuff. In my view, of course, one of the bad things was that she came to be anti-abortion. She wrote it out of the pamphlet.
Talk about that transition.
Well, I don't really understand what her emotional... I mean, nothing I've read...
She thought it was barbaric.
She came to think that. In the beginning, it was apparently acceptable to her. But by the time she had moved to, let's say, the third iteration of the text of Family Limitation, it was out. And interestingly enough, Dr. Equi helped her write it out, even though Dr. Equi was a skilled and very, very kind and generous abortionist. There were several such in Portland and in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I remember
that
Dr. Equi was, yes.
Yeah. So it's I can't say that I understand what made Margaret Sanger change her mind about abortion. But that's a serious error, given that, as we said some minutes back, there are no contraceptives that are both 100% effective and 100% safe in terms of health for women to use, even now in 2016. So there has to be abortion done well, done effectively, done with kindness, and at low or no price, to back up the contraceptive failure. And Sanger was not able to see that. So those two, from my point of view, others would say other things, I'm sure, are her two big failings. I'm always moved to point out that both of those, both things are true of Margaret Sanger, the good stuff and the bad stuff. And that's also, it's humbling to say for all of us, true of everybody. Her bad ones are big bad ones, but the good ones are big good ones.
Right.
And also, I will say this too. The commemoration on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, is not really about Margaret Sanger. It's about this thing happened in Portland 100 years ago. Women were arrested in the street for daring to do the stuff that Ani was talking about a little while ago, thinking for themselves, finding out about their bodies, doing a kind of self-help, learning how to deal with contraception, learning how to obtain contraception, and they were taken to jail for this. And that action and that thinking was considered obscenity and lewdness by the government of this city 100 years ago. So it's less to me about Margaret Sanger than it is about that fact and where we find ourselves today, also that you two have commented on already, in Portland 100 years later. It ain't over. It's back.
Incredibly.
You know, like a horror movie. It's back.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. I was just going to ID a bit.
That's what I was going to
well,
go right ahead.
All
Lynn.
Right. This is Positively Revolting. You're listening to KBOO in Portland. I'm Lynn. I'm here with, who are you?
Oh, I'm Ani.
Okay. And Judith Arcana, poet, activist, and historian, I say, on women's issues, a former
there's
Jane.
There's real historians
she
I'm
was
working
a Jane,
with.
Yes. She's a Jane in Chicago back in the day, helping women before abortions were legal, or whatever we have now. And
no, everything old is new them, again, really.
To obtain them. But anyway, we are here talking about Margaret Sanger a bit, but mostly about the event that, as Judith was just talking about, that is coming up this Wednesday. We would love to hear your calls, 503-231-8187. You can comment on, we're on Facebook, on Positively Revolting. We're on Gmail, positivelyrevolting.com, and we are on the Twitter sphere at Positive Revolt. You can contact us in oh so many ways, but this morning... Please feel free. Time's a-wasting. We're almost out of show. 503-231-8187 with your comments or questions for Judith.
And to, again, next Wednesday, I want the more particulars where and when things will be happening again.
Okay, good. I was just thinking that. Thank you, Ani. We're beginning at the Oregon Historical Society, an extraordinary lucky break for us that we have it right here in downtown Portland along the park blocks. We'll be beginning at the Oregon Historical Society's Outdoor Plaza, which is at 1200 Southwest Park, at 11 a.m. For folks who work downtown, this whole scene is going to be easily accessible. For folks who work elsewhere or who are not working on Wednesday, it's about, can you get there? Can you get there? Can you be with us? So at 11, we'll talk a little. The raging grannies are going to sing to encourage us to be positive with music.
Of course they are,
yes. Of course they are. You betcha. Some of us are going to say stuff about the past and the present. Then at about 11:30, we're going to walk over to where the Wednesday morning farmers market is so that we can talk to a lot of the folks who've come for lunch and to get their food for the rest of the week. And then at about 12:15, we'll walk over to the site of that theater I mentioned earlier where the Baker Theater was downtown, which is on Broadway close to Morrison. So if that's the time that's good for you, look for us on Broadway close to Morrison. And we'll be, some of us will be in period costumes. We'll all be talking. We'll have pamphlets. We'll have comics. We'll have all kinds of stuff to talk to you, talk with you, hear from you. And then at 12:45, we will march semi-fiercely over to the courthouse because, of course, that's where people were force marched when the arrest took place 100 years ago. And there's the park across the street where we can gather if indeed we are a sizable mob, a near riot, as we talked about before. A chummy, chatty, pleasant riot will be charming and evocative. So that's the schedule, starting at 11, going to about 1, going to those particular locations and giving out all kinds of info, including this cool new comic.
Charming and evocative, I think, is now my new favorite descriptive.
Good.
I now aspire to be charming and evocative at all times. It's awesome. 503-231-8187, the number to call. And, you know, you have another poem. You said that you have a second poem that you could share with us this morning. And do you think this might be the time to...
We can do that. This is actually, it's way too long to do. I've pulled out a section, and this is about, this is the section that's called European History, and I'll just do a few bits of it. This is the part about the way the bad guys have used the kind of science that we... that we have disdained, let's say, in genteel language.
That'll work for this morning on air.
Okay. So this is the section. The poem is called Brave and New, as in Brave New World. Mm-hmm. And this is a section of it called European History. And this is a section of that section. Most people now get queasy at direct language. Over 80 years since the fascists made a mess over there, where law married medicine in the 30s. And their issue was language we do not use. Back then, the Swiss, Danes, Norwegians and Swedes, Finns and Estonians were direct. Germany, growing strong again from Kaiser to Führer, was exemplary. Their sterilization law was the best on the books. We know that Mendel himself was German, you know, the bean man. No Friar Tuck, Gregor became abbot while his garden grew and chairman of the Moravian Mortgage Bank. England, too, our erstwhile distant mother, worried about mental defectives, wondering if she could restrict the multiplication of the sub-average. About the sub-average, Mother England had some questions. One, naturally, was how best they could be disposed of. Those are the bits of one section of Brave and New, which appears in a journal that came out about a dozen years ago. I think that, I don't want to sound like I'm dwelling in the hard parts, in the negative parts. I think that it's so important for us when we put our own thinking together, when we examine our own thinking, to recognize that even the things that exhilarate us, that excite us about growing strong in a society that's trying to keep us weak, about learning in a society that doesn't have many avenues for us to study in, the negative is like a bumper, you know, like in amusement parks when you're in bumper cars. The bad stuff is like the bumpers that you bounce off of, and it's almost like they're coming at you even though you're in the little car that's bumping up against them. And knowing the bad stuff, the scary stuff, the awful stuff, and for some of us, of course, it's part of our life, so we don't have to learn from an outsider. Knowing the bumpers encourages us, propels us, to learn the stuff that helps us live with integrity and the knowledge that we need.
Because the old phrase, knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
Indeed, indeed. And Family Limitation, there. That brief pamphlet, however different it was from what we might do now in birth control handbooks, was providing the power through knowledge, albeit with diagrams of anatomy that obviously terrified
Shocking.
The men on the city council
before,
in Portland.
Before the days of the tampon boxes that had them on, but yes.
Yes,
well before the days.
I know.
Yes, and I will say this too, the year before, this is not a one-time thing for the Portland City Council. The year before 1916, Emma Goldman was arrested in Portland for the same obscenity, lewdness, et cetera, because she was talking and teaching about birth control. By the way, her birthday is Monday.
Ah, that's right.
The 27th is Emma Goldman's birthday.
Have a dance for Emma.
Yes, have a dance.
You know, us cancers, we care. So, you know, in your words, in wrapped up in that poem and also, or in that excerpt, and we've kind of touched on it a couple of times, in the eugenics movement, there's something that I am seeing again, and I'm seeing it come to the fore, even amongst folks. We call it different things. Language changes to try to continue.
Something like Britain first?
Okay.
Pow, pow.
Yeah. Okay, so there's this, let's say, resurgent fascism that seems to be afoot in this country and perhaps in Britain. Okay. That there's a sort of this people getting whipped up into this, you know.
A frenzy, I think.
Yeah, sure, by demagogues who are trying to be politically, you know, expedient. And, you know, you can motivate a whole lot of people through fear and hate, right? And even amongst folks that I think have good analytical thinking heads and progressive attitudes about them, I'm hearing things like, you know, yeah, well, you know, stupid people. Those people that others that are, yeah, they shouldn't breed.
They're not.
They shouldn't do. Yeah,
really? Putting themselves in
all
favor,
of these things. And I'm Whoa. Like, oh, really? No, we can't actually go there. Right? I mean, the movie, what is that? Idiocracy? Is that the
movie?
Oh,
yeah. Oh.
Right? Which is a movie I found disturbing on a number of levels that many of my friends did not find it disturbing on. Because I felt like it had that kind of message in it, that there is this underclass that, for whatever reason, can't really make it. You know, that these are the folks, these are the unwashed masses that are just going to drag society down.
Well, I don't know that movie, but while you were talking, what I was thinking about, of course, was the incredible furor about immigration, which is certainly to some, I would say not small extent, rooted in this sense of the inferiority of the people who are the quote unquote immigrants. The people who have, these are people who are mostly not white. These are people who have come from lands that the speakers in situations that you're talking about feel the lands are inferior to this land. It does smack of, it doesn't just smack of, it is about a sense of ill-gained, if it's even in existence, superiority on the part of white Americans. So the
delusional superiority.
All right, delusional, I'll go for that. That's a great word.
Yeah.
The immigration thing is about the notion that not only are these people coming here and taking our jobs, et cetera, but it's that these people are, this stuff that you were citing, Ani, mm-hmm. these people are not the kind of people we want in this country. And certainly that is part of the arguments about contraception, the arguments about sterilization, so that when, for instance, when you go to the website of Trust Black Women or the website of, Rewire, this excellent journal that's online that has a really good article by Imani Gandhi about Margaret Sanger and about that problem of the two aspects that we were talking about before. When you go to these sites, you see the experiences of women and girls of color and how different they often are, particularly if they are not upper middle class or rich. And there are, after all, women and girls of color who are upper middle class and rich, but they are not, shall we say, the majority in the USA. Mm-hmm. And when you go to those sites, you learn what happens when those folks show up and say, we need this, we want that. And these are the things that women in this country, white women in this country, have been saying, but suddenly it's Americana who is saying it. Suddenly it's a woman from North Africa who's saying it. And what does that mean? How does that work? That's different, they say. Yeah, and the difference is skin color, national origin, and class.
Yep.
Right. So, with, 4 minutes left.
I laugh so I do not cry.
Laughing is good. Laughing is good.
It's, where do we go from here? So, we have the pendulum swing. I think that noting, I was thrilled to hear about the event because I think it's important to take stock, to step back for a moment and realize that things have not gone exactly forward in a smooth line, and that really just isn't how progressivism works. That's really, unfortunately, not how societies really change, that there's always ebbs and flows, and to really take stock of where we're at now in terms of sort of a neo-Puritanism, as we look at our sex education in our schools, where abstinence is actually being taught as the most effective method of birth control. Okay, I'm not going to argue. It's the most effective if implemented.
Yes, let's really? let's make
but
that
But perhaps one of the most difficult to implement at the same time.
Certainly statistically not appearing to be effective.
Thank you, Judith. Well,
absolutely. And we can look at how very different our teen pregnancy rates are with our abstinence education compared to, say, European teen birth rates with, science-based education, actually. We can, where do we go? How do we, in fact, try to regain some ground actually advance the empowerment of women?
Well, one of the things we can do, she said, like a slogan, is learn history. And that's what this coming Wednesday's event is doing. It's taking what we know about what happened in the past, bringing it into the present for examination, and hoping that that action, that thinking, that way of behaving will help us make the future be far better for all of us than what it might look like without the study, or in this case, the examination on foot in costume of the history really is. That's, I think, such a tremendous value to all such things, not just our event on Wednesday. Find out what happened in the past and say, oh, well, if that, then this maybe, huh?
Be curious. Be curious.
Yeah. Bring that information into the present and use it. It's a different kind of social science. That's why they created the term social science for history, literature, music, etc. It's a social science. Move it along. Take it from the past. Bring it into the present. Implement it for the future. So join us on Wednesday, the 29th, for this commemoration of the action of the Portland cops instigated by the Portland City Council against the women and girls of the metropolis.
Excellent. And with that, let's go ahead and call it a wrap. Judah, thank you so very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you both. You guys are fun.
Oh, good.
I want to remind listeners that you can follow along on Facebook. You can find our page and be a fan. Positively Revolting is how you find us on Facebook. On Twitter, we are at Positive Revolt. Judith, how do people find your work?
I have a website, juditharcana.com. Thank you for asking. And it has my books, and it's got a whole Jane page about abortion work and other reproductive justice links. So check it out, juditharcana.com.
Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.
And I just want to remind people about the public hearing by the EPA that's taking place at the City Building at 1120 Southwest 5th today from 11:30 to 8 p.m. Officials will be recording public comments from people about their thoughts on the proposed plan for the Portland Harbor Superfund. That's not super fun. It's super fun to cite. Mm. For information, you can go to cleanupportlandharbor.org.
And next week, Lynn and I will be back talking with Brian S. Wilson about the documentary Praying the Price for Peace, which will be airing. Oh. Yeah, he is.
Well, thank you, Judith.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Judith is a fan. It's awesome.
It's no problem.
And with that, we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
No, this is it.
The preceding program was brought to you by Nappy Farms, specializing in sustainable, you-pick blueberry practices. Blueberry practices. Nappy Farms, you-pick blueberries is located at 10280 Southeast Orient Drive in Boring, Oregon. For more information about sustainable blueberries, go to, their number is 503-663-8085 or online at nappyfarms.com.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, the hallmark event for the Oregon Food Bank. This year, the festival will be held July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Everyone will need a pass this year to see such artists as Dr. John and the Night Trippers, Liv Warfield and the Special Horns, Curtis Salgado, and many more. More information about passes, the performers, the role of the Oregon Food Bank, and more can be found at KBOO.org.